Blog Talk Radio. It's time for Monday Night Radio. Monday night is your night to talk with the experts. Call us now to get into the queue at 866-MONDAY-6. That's 866-MONDAY-6. Call us now. Or email your questions and comments to comments@mondaynightradio.com or tweet them to us at Monday Radio. And now, here's your host, Ann P. Mitchell, Esquire. Of up to 80 miles an hour, and then yesterday it was just gorgeous and sunny, and today it was a bit chilly, and it may go down into the teens tonight, and yet tomorrow it's going to be up in the 50s. So, let me remind you about last week's show, and last week's show was about how to make the workplace more enjoyable with workplace expert Linda Barbacci, and that show is now available in transcript and audio recorded format. It was a wonderful show, and we very much enjoyed having her with us. This week, we are going to talk about holiday depression and also, relatedly, seasonal affective disorder. And that is something that affects many people, and often they don't even realize that that's what's happening. It's quite insidious. And we will be talking with Dr. Ken Unger, who has a great deal of experience dealing with seasonal depression, holiday depression, and helping people with that. And one of the really wonderful things about Dr. Unger is that he does this without the aid of medication. In fact, he really, really does his best to help people to learn how to deal with their seasonal affective disorder or their depression and to do so without the use of medication. And so as soon as Dr. Unger joins us, we are in the process of contacting him right now. And as soon as we get in touch with him, we will get him on the line. In the meantime, I was wondering who would like to contact us and tell us their story of seasonal affective disorder or having holiday depression. So if you're out there in the listening audience, give us a call. The number is 866-MONDAY-6. That's 866-MONDAY-6, or you can send us email to comments@mondaynightradio.com or contact us by AOL Instant Messenger at Monday Night Radio, or you can join us through Twitter on @MondayRadio. And as soon as we hear from him, then we will put him right on the air. And in the meantime, I am just going to talk until he comes on. Although I suppose perhaps you would rather listen to the sultry tones of producer Evan, but I think maybe we won't do that to him because he is right now trying to reach Dr. Unger. So, in addition to loving the weather in Boulder, one of the things I really enjoy is the view. So let's talk about that view for a minute. Because the view from Boulder, Colorado is unlike any other. If you have never been to Boulder, let me tell you that you really just, you need to check it out. It's one of the most enchanting, wonderful, tranquil, and yet majestic places to which I've ever been. And I've been quite a few places. I have been in Hawaii. I have been... Now, I'm talking about living. I've lived in Hawaii. I've lived in New England. I've lived on the West Coast. I've been to Yosemite. I've been to Big Sur. I've even been to Mount St. Helens, and let me tell you, that was quite an interesting trip. But nowhere, nowhere, I repeat, nowhere have I been more enchanted, more entranced than here in Boulder, Colorado. And so, this is where I am, and this is where I commend you to visit. And if you visit, look me up. All right, we're going to go to a testimonial now, and we are still trying to get Dr. Unger on the line.
Hi, my name is Ellen Wood, and I just want to tell everybody that Ann Mitchell is fabulous. She's a great interviewer. I teach people how to grow younger, and I thoroughly enjoyed my interview with her. She was so upbeat, and she asked good questions. And if you have a chance to listen to only one show, make it Ann's.
That was Ellen Wood. She teaches people how to grow younger, and you can listen to her Monday Night Radio show by going to our Monday Night Radio archives, and those are at www.mondaynightradio.com, and you can just click on the interview archive section. You can also read previous interviews. We have them in transcript form, and that also is in the interview archive section. And you can also listen on iTunes. So for those of you who aren't aware, you can go to iTunes and you can look up Monday Night Radio, and you can get all of our previous shows in a podcast format. You can download them to your iPod. You can download them to your computer. You can pretty much download them to anything that will play that format. And that was a very interesting show that we had with Ellen that day. And let's see, what do we have here tonight? Oh, yes, we have another testimonial. Let's hear what this person has to say.
Hi, this is Reverend Andrea Rayner, author of The Voice That Calls You Home. I just wanted to say that I am a huge fan of Monday Night Radio, and what a wonderful experience for listeners to be able to tune in from their computers or from Skype or their handheld devices and to participate in discussions led by a very, very able hostess, Anne. And thank you for the opportunity. I will be tuning in to other shows from now on. So, again, big fan of Monday Talk Radio. Thanks.
And that was the Reverend Andrea Rayner, and she joined us last month. She was the chaplain, or one of the chaplains, at Ground Zero at 9/11. And if you want to talk about a tough job, having to help the families who had lost their loved ones at 9/11 and who had every reason to lose every bit of faith, and yet she did it with such grace and such care and loving, and it was just amazing to even talk to her. So we're going to do something a bit novel now. We are going to open the show up to anyone who would like to call in and use the show as a platform. So we are going to play a little bit of music. It's our closing music, but I'm just going to use it to entertain you while I set this up. So just hang on just a minute. And this, you know, we're going by the seat of our pants now because we are missing a guest. Our guest seems to be missing in action. All right. I used that opportunity while you were listening to that lovely music to send a message out, and now I'm sending it out over the air as well. Anybody, this is your opportunity. If you would like the opportunity to get on Monday Night Radio and talk about anything you would like to talk about, this could be an advertisement for your business and services. It could be something that's on your mind. Anybody can call in to talk about anything right now. Give us a call at 866-MONDAY-6. That's 866-MONDAY-6, and you will have your own platform to talk about whatever you want on Monday Night Radio, because our guest is missing in action. That's right. So his missing in action, and sure, I sure hope that he's okay, but his being missing in action means that you get a chance to call in and talk about whatever you want. So let's just take a little bit time for more music, because you know what? Believe it or not, I'm very good at multitasking, but I cannot type and talk at the same time. So, you know, we're going to have to get some other music for just this sort of occasion. But for now, just enjoy this again, would you? Thank you so much. Okay, there we go. Now, I'm going to have to really perfect my multitasking, clearly. But anyway, anybody who's going to call, the first person to call, the floor is yours, or the airwaves, or whatever it is that you want to call it. But this show is going to go on with or without this guest. And so I do have to apologize that I can't dispense the same sort of advice that he would have. And again, I hope he's all right. But give us a call. Take the mic for yourself. Call in and tell us anything that you want, whatever is on your mind. We will take you in as the first caller, and we will let you have the open air. And while we are waiting for that, I'm going to tell you a little about how I got into Father's Rights, because that is something that people always ask me. And until someone comes and takes this mic away from me to take us up on our offer to call in and talk about anything you'd like, I will tell you that story. So this is how I got into Father's Rights. A long, long time ago, in a galaxy far away. All right, it wasn't a galaxy, but it was another state that's very far away. I worked as the office manager for a dental office. And many of our patients were attorneys. And one day, one of the attorneys who was coming in for a dental appointment was running very late, and she rushed in, very apologetic, "Oh, I'm so sorry I'm late, so sorry I'm late." And she said, "But I was at the state capitol, and I was testing for the new testifying for the new proposed child support legislation. And I, being a woman, and she, being a woman, I said to her, 'Well, you're for it, aren't you?' And she said, 'Oh, no, 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 it's terrible, terrible proposed law.' And she then proceeded to explain to me all the reasons that this law was so bad. Among other things, it would allow the court to apply the new child support formula that they were contemplating retroactively, meaning that non-custodial parents who had been paying their child support on time and who were fully caught up could possibly find themselves suddenly thousands of dollars in arrears, even though they'd been doing everything right. Another thing about the proposed law was that it gave the judge absolutely no discretion whatsoever to deviate from the proposed formula. So that meant that even if there were really extenuating circumstances, that the judge would not be able to change the mandated amount of child support unless there was one exception, and that would be they would have to put it in very detailed writing, And then, of course, they would be open to it being appealed. And so no judge is going to do that. And so for all intents and purposes, it meant that at no time would the judge be able to really deviate from this formula. And so she was telling me this, and I was thinking in my head, now I had just gone through a fairly contentious divorce, and we had just finalized things, and things were sort of back on even keel. And as she was telling me this, I was imagining what would happen if I took my newly minted ex back to court and had them apply this formula. Now, he was not in very good shape at that point financially. He was on the brink of bankruptcy. He actually had a baby on the way with his new wife. It was really, really pretty ugly. And the reality was that if this law passed, I could absolutely destroy him. And, you know, for a split second, that was really tempting. And immediately after that split second, I thought, oh, my God, we're already done with our divorce and with all the rancor and the acrimony and the fighting. And even though we're already done, I was so tempted. The thought of being able to sort of just squash him for that split second was really tempting. And I thought, wow, if that was tempting to me to have that much power over him and we're already done, what do you think that would do to couples who are in the throes of their divorce, who are in the middle of the court process and the anger and the hurt and all that that goes with it? And somehow I was able to realize that if this law passed and if that playing field was made so uneven, that it wouldn't really help children. It wouldn't even really help the woman, because what it would do is those men who were really trying and who were really doing the right thing, keeping their support up, they would be driven underground because they wouldn't be able to meet that obligation. And so I didn't think that that was very good for the kids, and it clearly wasn't good for the custodial, the non-custodial parents. And so somehow I realized that that was really a pretty bad law. So I said to her, well, gosh, we should do something about this. What can we do? I know we have to have a referendum. Well, you see, I was very politically naive back then, and so I thought all states had referendums. But this was New York, and as it happens, New York does not have a referendum. And so she said, well, you could contact Albany. You could let them know how you feel. And I said, well, someone has to do something. And I decided that that someone would be me. And so I took an ad out in the local, what's called a penny saver, kind of one of those little shopper newspapers, and I put together a father's rights organization. And at that point, we got a group of men together, a group of fathers and their new spouses and even some custodial parents, and we went to Albany and we lobbied, and I am very happy to say that we actually were able to help change that law. And so that is how I ended up getting involved with Father's Rights. Now, I thought I would be done at that point. You know, it was sort of a one-trick pony, and after we had managed to get the law to be a little bit more sane, I would kind of be done with it. But as the story goes, that wasn't all she wrote. And I ended up going to law school, and I ended up becoming one of the first Father's Rights lawyers in the country. So that is the story of how I became involved with Father's Rights. And I hope that that was an interesting way to use up some of this time while our guest is still missing in action. And I have been told that Dr. Unger has just joined us, and I'm so very pleased with that, because I have to tell you, I am just about talked out. So let me tell you about Dr. Unger. Dr. Ken Unger, his credentials include more than 35 years of counseling and spiritual healing. He's the author of The Ultimate Breakthrough, and he has degrees in counseling and psychotherapy, has served as the dean of counseling at a major Bible college, and has counseled the inner city youths and worked in psychiatric hospitals, prisons, churches, and colleges, as well as serving as the pastor at three different facilities over the course of 23 years. He is extremely qualified to talk with us about dealing with holiday depression and seasonal affective disorder and those sorts of things, and how to help either yourself or those around you without medication. And It's really no wonder that he has earned the nickname of the Soul Doctor. Let's bring him on. Good evening, Dr. Unger. Are you there?
I am here. My apologies. I got waylaid, and I'm so sorry I'm late.
It's, you know, you're here, and that's the important thing, and we hope that it was not a bad waylaying.
No, everything is fine.
Well, I hope you won't mind if we jump right in. We have lots and lots of questions. Some of them are from our staff and from me, and some of them are from people who have emailed them in. And
great.
First, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself? You probably heard my intro, but if there's anything you'd like to add to that.
Well, probably one thing I'd like your listeners to know is that I would like to make available to them a free article, actually a chapter from my book that was an addendum to my book, The Ultimate Breakthrough, Spiritual Therapy for Emotional Pain. And so many people would talk to me about anxiety and depression that I did write an addendum for it called Peace Without Prozac. And if any of your listeners would visit my website and click on the red link at the top of the site and just send their email address, I will send them a copy of that addendum to my book called Peace Without Prozac. And it's 7 simple steps that people can do to enable them to find peace and not need drugs in order to do that.
And Dr. Unger, what is your website?
The website is transformationincorporated.com, or people can also go to www.souldr.com.
Okay, and we will, of course, include that in our archives and the article about you and the audio, so there will be many ways that people will be able to find both of those websites and your very generous offer of the free chapter. Dr. Unger, I'm wondering if, to start, you could help people to understand exactly, you know, the difference between, you know, what is depression, particularly around the holidays and as it affects the holiday season, and there's seasonal affective disorder, and what distinguishes those sorts of situations from someone just being really sad? I mean, you could certainly be very sad about something that occurs around the holidays or something that occurs in your life. And at what point is it not just sort of a discrete sad episode, but actual depression?
Well, you know, that's an excellent question. And what I tell people is that it's the difference between waking up and saying, "Good morning, God," and waking up and saying, "Good God, morning." It's when... when you dread the morning, and I have been there. I've been to a place in my past when I would literally sleep 18 hours a day. Now, I was on prescription drugs at the time, and it was awful. It was like a living hell. And what I want people to know is that you don't have to be in that living hell. You don't have to be in that place where you just hate getting up in the morning. And I think, you know, you mentioned seasonal affective disorder. I grew up in Cleveland and spent most of my life there. And it's the second grayest city in America.
What's the first?
I think Seattle.
Oh.
There's just a ton of clouds and gray days, and it really affects you chemically because you don't get the vitamin D that you need, but it affects your mood. And now I live in Southern California. We used to have 300 gray days in Cleveland every year, and now we have 300 sunny days here in Southern California where I live. And it just affects your day so much. But you can seasonal affective disorder by adding something as simple as vitamin D supplements into your diet so that you're getting the recharge that you need from the sun. But you can also do other things. One of the major things that I recommend in my Peace Without Prozac addendum is that people would just take a walk. You know, I say, go take a hike. And what I mean by that is if people would just walk for 30 minutes, even if it's really cold and you don't want to do that outside, go to a mall and just walk through the mall for 30 minutes. Find a place where you are getting some exercise. And, you know, the way I stumbled onto this is that Henry David Thoreau once said he never had a problem that didn't go away after a long walk. And so I started doing that myself, and I learned that just the simple act of taking a walk, and I, to be honest with you, I can't explain why. I think some of it is chemical because your endorphins kick in, but there's something more to it. There's something spiritual and very cognitive and intellectual that happens. And you can't come back from a long walk without seeing life a little bit better. And so that's one of the key things I recommend for people to do. But the holidays are full of those times when, you know, I can remember times when literally I would, when I was married, I would pick a fight with my wife because I dreaded going to Thanksgiving. And it would prolong the time to get to Thanksgiving because you get there and there's family members you don't really want to see and there's people you really don't want to be around. And that's not true for everybody, but for a lot of us, there are people that we're related to, and you can't pick your relatives, that we just don't enjoy being around. And so you're with them during the holidays. That's one of the problems. There's the gift giving. There's so many facets to, especially, I think, what's very poignant for people is the loneliness they feel. They maybe were married and they aren't, or they always wanted to be married and they haven't been, or they were in a relationship and that went sour and they're lonely and their children neglect them and don't bother to call. And so many factors like that where people just feel like this season that should be so full of joy and happiness is instead a very lonely, empty, and busy place, and it's busy in all the wrong ways.
Well, and there's nothing so poignant as the kind of loneliness that you experience when you're surrounded by happy people.
That's true. That's true. And you hear the songs about what a wonderful time of year it is and all of this stuff. And, you know, I know some people who just won't even listen to Christmas music because it so bothers them. It's so painful for them to hear it. So it's a season that ought to be wonderful, and maybe we have wonderful memories and those memories are gone and we feel like we have no hope of life ever being good again, which is never true for anyone, but it's easy to get to that place. And what I do in my work, if I'm working with an individual client and doing individual therapy, is I want them to come to me when they're really feeling terrible, when they're really feeling awful, because the work that I do is what I call step therapy, spiritual therapy for emotional pain. And I wrote my book, The Ultimate Breakthrough, so people wouldn't have to come to me. They could actually take a book, work it as a workbook, and they could experience healing. And so the down place where people go to, whether it's sadness, as you mentioned, or loneliness, or depression, or anxiety. By the way, anxiety is what really leads to depression. But when people get into that dark place where they just can't see up, you know, they have to look up to see the curb. They're so far down.
Mm-hmm.
When they get to that place, that's when I want to find them and have them come to me. Or in this case, you know, if they can't come to me for therapy, or they can't come to one of my retreats or seminars, they can get a copy of this book and start using the book as a workbook. It took me 10 years to write the book because I wanted to create a book that healed. I wanted a book that people could actually, a lot of people talk about healing, but it really isn't healing that they're talking about. They're talking about cognitive therapy or changing your diet or various other things. The reality is when we have an emotional problem, we have an emotional need. And most people I know have analyzed their problem to death. They've gone into the paralysis of analysis. They've talked it to death. They've thought about it every which way they can. And the truth is that we forget 90% of what's happened to us. So what we can do with our mind can only solve 10% of our problem. But all of the emotions that we've ever had in our life are stored within us. And if you can tap into the emotional pain at a deep and profound level, with the proper guidance, that pain can be healed. And what I tell people is, when you heal the pain, you don't need the aspirin anymore, whatever the aspirin is.
Well, and you know, that is a wonderful segue into the issue and question of medication, because I know that you are a great proponent of not using medication whenever possible. And so can you talk a little bit about that? And actually, let me lead in by saying there was just a study released. I believe it was, in fact, in the December issue of the Archives of General Psychiatry, which says that fewer Americans, well, it's, and here, let me put it this way, it says that antidepressant prescription rates have skyrocketed.
Yes.
While at the same time, fewer and fewer Americans have sought psychotherapy for their depression. So more people are getting medicated, but fewer people are actually going for clinical help. And the author of the study said, and I'm quoting now, this is an encouraging trend.
Oh, it's just
and
the opposite.
And I'm just kind of flabbergasted.
Yeah. No, it's just the opposite. We in America alone spend $200 million every day on antidepressants.
What, say that again, every day?
Every day on antidepressants, we spend $200 million.
How is that even possible?
Isn't that incredible? It's a multi-billion dollar industry. And the psychiatrists get the money. I mean, they get their fee just for you coming in for 15 minutes to get a new subscription, a prescription. And so the whole chemical model of treating what's wrong with us is a model that is failing us miserably. It leads to, there's over 100 medical problems that can develop from using antidepressants, and not the least of which is death. But most people find when they get into antidepressants that it will destroy their libido, and that affects their marriage and their relationships and their capacity to experience love. So there are so many complications from antidepressants. And one of the things that I talk about in my book is the fact that the word psychology means knowledge of the soul. The psyche means the soul. The word psychiatry means treatment of the soul. And what I would say is that the reason people aren't going to psychologists and psychiatrists is because they don't treat the soul. They treat the mind and the body. And again, the problem is much deeper than that in the psyche of people. Some psychiatrist many years ago in Newsweek magazine made this very, I think, very shocking and significant statement. He said, "Psychiatry without God is malpractice."
Ooh.
And what he meant by that is, it's not that you have to be religious, but we are created as spiritual beings and spiritual creatures. And if we have a problem, it will affect us spiritually as well as intellectually and physically. And if you go to a doctor and all they can give you is something for your head or something for your body, we know instinctively. When I talk to people about my work, their heads start nodding because they know instinctively that when you have an emotional problem, you need an emotional solution. I did one of my healing seminars in a prison a few years ago in Ohio. And my seminars take usually 48 hours. In fact, we tell people you can change your life in a weekend. Well, they only gave me 8 hours.
Oh.
And so I had to move quick. And so the first thing I did is I asked the inmates that were there, how many of you are here because of mishandled emotions? Every hand shot up. Every hand shot up. They knew that the reason they were having problems was rooted in their emotions and how they handled their rage or their depression or their anger or their frustration, their impatience. And again, psychology and psychiatry doesn't treat the emotions, which is a key component of the soul. The soul is comprised of the intellect, the emotions, and the will. And you can give people anger management classes all day, and they're still going to be angry, which is why people say, oh, if anybody is ever abusive, there's no hope, they'll always be abusive. That's not true. What's true is that the things that we do for people when they're in that state aren't working. and they aren't working because the problem is rooted in the emotions. And so the method that I use, which in the Ultimate Breakthrough, I explain the methodology. It's very simple. And you read through it, and you get to the two chapters on practical methods and techniques. And people think, well, this can't work. It's too simple. But it really does work. It's basically getting in touch with the emotion. And somehow, every emotion we've ever had is stored within us. And if a person can get deeply in touch with their current pain, somehow there's a leap of the synapse. I don't really understand it at all. I just know that it works.
Mm-hmm.
And they begin to connect with a previous pain they've long forgotten. And when that pain is healed, then most of the other things that were wrong with their life start changing. Nothing changes unless we change. And the most profound changes we can make are spiritual and emotional, not intellectual and not physical, not chemical and medical. The chemical problems people have in their chemistry makeup are a result, not a cause. They're a result, usually, of stinking thinking. And
You're listening to Monday Night Radio. Our guest is Dr. Ken Unger, the Soul Doctor. And you can call in if you have questions or comments at 866-MONDAY-6. That's 866-MONDAY-6. You can email us at comments@mondaynightradio.com. Or you can send us a message by AIM, AOL Instant Messenger, at Monday Night Radio, by Facebook at Monday Night Radio, or by Twitter at Monday Radio. Dr. Unger, you're talking about not using medication and about really digging in and finding the feelings. And very interestingly, there was another study that came out just this week. So this seems like this is the week for studies that are right in your sweet spot. And this is one, I don't know if you read about it. It was it came out of the Center for Addiction and Mental Health in Canada. And what they say, and I think you're going to like this, is, and I'm quoting here again, is that being mindful of life events that make you happy or sad may be just as effective as taking medication to prevent depression, and that by undergoing what they are calling the mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, which sounds a whole lot to me like what you're talking about, people can learn how to meditate and pay attention to their emotional triggers. And the researcher there says when you do that, you gain better control over cognitive emotions that can trigger a relapse into depression without you even being aware of it. And so first of all, I'd like to have you comment, because that does sound to me like what you're talking about. And then also, how can you have a relapse into depression but not be aware of it? I mean, this is obviously not your statement, but if you have some insight into that.
Well, on your first point, I totally agree. And I do something with people I call rethreading your head. And what I mean by that is it's a simple process of training yourself to think differently. So that if you find your mind filled with anxiety, one of the quotes I love comes from Mark Twain. He said, "My life is a long series of problems, most of which never happened." Isn't that great?
Yes,
when you think about it, 95% of the things we're afraid of never happen. But it's the fear, it's the stinking thinking, it's the catastrophizing, it's letting your mind go to those places where you create this scenario of terrible things and terrible realities. And so if you can realize that most of, and I'll tell you something, walking immediately starts to defuse that. But the things that don't get diffused, when you begin to become conscious of things that you want to change about your life, what I encourage people to do to rethread your head or change the stinking thinking is to take, first, what they're saying is you become aware, you get in touch with the kind of thought process that's going on. And let's say you're absolutely convinced maybe that a certain person really doesn't like you, somebody at work or your boss or something. And so you just live in that place of thinking, there's nothing I can do to please this person. It's hopeless. I know I'm going to lose my job. I know they hate me. You start going down that path. And it just gets worse.
Such a self-fulfilling prophecy then.
Exactly. because the law of attraction is that good or bad, we draw to ourselves what we believe. And so when your thoughts start going there and you start to buy it, if you buy it, you own it. And so pretty soon, you said that so well, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so what I encourage people to do is when you catch yourself doing that, take that thought that you're having, that recurring catastrophizing thought, and replace it with something else. All of nature abhors a vacuum, and so it's not enough to stop thinking that way. You have to replace the negative with something positive. And so I would encourage people to take, out of my tradition, which is a Christian tradition, I will take a Bible verse that helps me. So if I'm dealing with anxiety, for instance, there's one passage of Scripture that I love because it deals with the very core of anxiety. And it's a passage that says, "In nothing be anxious." Then it says, "But in everything, through prayer and supplication, let your requests be made known to God." And that simple passage first tells you what not to do. Don't be anxious. Anxiety will never help. It will only hurt. Anxiety is never your friend. Then, instead of just saying don't be anxious, it says, it gives you something positive to do. Let your request be made known to God. And the passage ends by saying, then start thinking about good things, whatever is positive, whatever is beautiful, whatever is wonderful in your life. Think about these things, and it ends with an incredible promise that says, "The peace that passes all understanding will guard your heart and mind if you do that." The peace that passes all understanding will guard your heart and mind. And a person dealing with depression, that's exactly what they need. They need to guard their mind that's going there, and their heart, which fuels all of these things into their mind. The heart is the subconscious. It's what I call the basement of the soul. It's that deep reservoir within us through which all of these negative things that pollute our lives and destroy our lives come out of the heart, out of that deep place in our subconscious. And so I encourage people to rethread their head by, if they don't believe in the Bible, that's fine. You can still find a positive meditation. You can begin to say, today is going to be a wonderful day. My boss loves me, and I love my boss. And I'm, again, one of my favorite scriptures is love never fails. One of the shortest scriptures in the Bible. Love never fails. Even if your boss hates you, if you can learn to love your boss and repay evil with kindness and become competent and find ways to do for your boss what you wish your boss would do for you, the situation can change. It can turn around. And that's true in any relationship in our lives. And relationships, face it, relationships are where most of our problems come from. I think Sartre was right when he said, hell is other people.
Dr. Unger, we have Jeff calling from Boulder who would like to talk with you. And Jeff, you're on the line with Dr. Ken Unger, the Soul Doctor.
Hi, Ken.
Hi, Jeff.
So I've had an interesting couple experiences with holiday depression, and one includes my roommate of a couple years ago calling me on Christmas Eve and saying his dad had committed suicide, as well as entering a conversation with a cook I work with who said her son had committed suicide around this time a couple years ago. So I was wondering, I mean, I guess at the moment I was at a loss for words, as you could probably guess. But in that future, and for future reference, I suppose, and I hope I never have to reference this information in the future, what are some ways that I could react / comfort, or how do I respond to those situations, I guess?
Well, let me tell you, how did you respond? Let me ask you this, how did you respond?
My roommate who called me on Christmas Eve, I simply said, "I'm sorry. I'm terribly sorry for your loss. I, like I said, I was at a loss for words for the most part. I did what I could as far as condolences go, but I just have this feeling that nothing could have really helped out at that moment."
All right. I love how you said that, Jeff. You were at a loss for words. In fact, that is a good thing, because a lot of times when people call us with grief, we think we have to say something. And the reality is, the less you say, the better. The best thing you can do if somebody is grieving in any situation is listen. And the best thing that person can do is talk. And if you can get them to tell you their feelings about that person who committed suicide, that will help them more than anything else. I learned many years ago that grief is like a big hole. And the way to fill the hole back up again is to talk about the thing that you lost, whether it's a relationship or a cherished possession or a friendship or a mate or a lot of money. The best thing you can help a person do when they're experiencing any loss is to get them to talk about that loss. And so if you can say, gosh, that must have been awful. Tell me how you're feeling right now. Tell me what you're thinking. Tell me what your father meant to you. Tell me what your sister meant to you. Tell me what your wife meant to you. I'd love to hear that. You have my ears. The best thing you can give, God gave us one mouth and two ears, and most of us act as if he gave us two mouths and no ears, if I dare say that. The best thing you can do for a person is listen. So when you feel like you don't know what to say, that's a great thing. And I would encourage you in the future, if you ever come into a situation like that, to just draw the person out and get them to talk about their loss. Does that make sense, Jeff?
Yeah, it really does. I do appreciate it, because it seems like no words could possibly help in that situation, you know?
They really can't. I mean, the person, usually with a suicide, a person will also feel blamed.
Yeah.
You know, whether they have any blame or not, they're going to feel like, oh, I should have known. What if I had done this? What if I had done that? What if I had gone to visit my father? Or what if I had gone, what if I had called? I didn't even call because I was too busy with myself. So, you know, you can even say, tell me how you're feeling. Tell me what's going on in your mind. What are you thinking about right now? And if they say that, let them say it. Let them say it. And then I would say something to them like this. I would say something like, do you know, most people, when they lose someone in that way, it's so terrible because it's almost impossible not to blame yourself in some way. But you know you're not to blame, right?
Yeah, he did seem pretty... I mean, he did put a small amount of blame. From what I learned afterwards, yeah. It's a very important... Thank you. It's a very important point that I need to keep in mind. Or
yeah,
at least understand, you know.
That's the cruel thing about suicide, because the people who loved you and the people you loved are going to say, oh, what did I do wrong? What didn't I do? How could I have helped? How why was I so selfish? All these things. And some people will carry that the rest of their life because they'll never find anybody who will give them their two ears long enough for them to get out whatever is inside of them that's rattling around inside that place in the heart, in the subconscious, in the basement of the soul, where all of those terrible thoughts are there and weighing them down and burdening them. And somehow the magic of talking, of getting a person to talk. I'll tell you something. I am best in working in therapy. When I'm doing cognitive therapy with people, I am best when I'm asking questions, and I am worst when I'm giving answers. They say, about... Let me just say this real quick. One of the things I say about psychology or psychiatry is you're only as good as your last question. So go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No. I was just, Jeff, I'm wondering, are either of these people that you are likely to see again or, you know, around the holidays each year? Is that something?
Well, I mean, yeah, tomorrow I'll see the woman whose son committed suicide. She's a chef at the school I work at.
Are you wondering, you know, like, do you bring it up because it's a horrible anniversary? Do you pretend nothing happened? Is that on your mind as well?
Yeah, I mean, we've kind of talked about it, but I just don't want to come off. I just, you know, these words, you know, the perfect words to say in the scenario just seem to slip away into my mind, you know, and it's one of those things where I really appreciate this advice, because if it comes up again, I'll just tell her, you know, if you ever need any years, I got two of them. So,
well, Dr. Unger, what I'm wondering is, you know, is this a situation where someone in Jeff's situation should sort of take the bull by the horn and go up to this woman and say, you know, I know this must be a really tough time of year for you, and I just want you to know that I'm here to listen if you need to talk?
That's exactly what I was thinking of. I think that's wonderful, a wonderful thing that he could do. It depended on the quality of relationship that he has with her. And again, you don't want to do it in such a time when maybe there's other people around. She might tear up and feel awkward feel bad. But if you could call her aside and say, look, I know this is a time when you're probably thinking about your son. And let her say, yeah, it's really hard. And say, you know what, I would love to take you out for some coffee. Could we do that? Could I take you to get some coffee and or some hot chocolate? I'd love to just be here for you.
Are you there?
Yeah. No, I appreciate it. No, because, I mean, we have kind of talked about it. She brought it up willfully. You know, I had no idea of the incident, and she seemed pretty forthcoming about, you know, letting me know that this had happened. But they also kind of seemed like a person she can talk to in the workplace. So I really do appreciate that, and I will definitely let her know, because she seemed kind of bummed about it. Isn't that like a silly thing to say in this instance? But, you know, even after a few years, she's still pretty, you know, just pretty bummed about it. So
of course, she will be for the rest of her life. Let me ask you this, Jeff. Do you believe in prayer yourself?
I do.
Don't underestimate its power. I mean, quantum physics is now authenticating the power of prayer. And you can literally pray for comfort to come to her, and for her thoughts and for her heart and mind to be protected, and for the right opportunity to talk with her and to cheer her up and to lift her spirits. And, I mean, and maybe you might even want to consider doing something like buying a card and saying, I'm thinking of you at this time of year, and I just want you to know I appreciate you. I mean, how many times in your life do you ever get a card like that?
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's so simple. The simple things we can do to show that we care are so powerful and so profound and so simple and so rare. So look for random acts of kindness, too. I think she's fortunate to have a friend like you, Jeff.
Well, thank you.
She really is.
Thank,
she really is.
Thank you, Jeff, for the call. Thank you so much. Dr.
Well,
Unger,
we
have just... That was some very valuable advice that you had for Jeff. Thank you, Dr. Unger. We have a few more minutes. I'd like to just hold you over a little bit, if you don't mind, because
absolutely,
just,
I owe
just
you.
Because well, I don't look at it that way, but we have another caller on hold. And before we go to this caller, I wanted to ask you a little bit about seasonal affective disorder and how that might look like sort of holiday depression, but it's really kind of different, isn't it? It's really something that is truly triggered in the person who suffers with it by the changing of the seasons.
Well, it really is different. I remember there was a lag time between when I decided to move to California and when I got here of about 18 months. And I was so eager to move to California, I realized that I had wanted to live in California ever since I was 12 when I first visited California. And here I was 49, and I was finally getting to do that, but it took a year and a half to sell houses and boats and things I needed to do and make the transition. And the last two winters that I spent in Cleveland, I would literally hurt when I would go outside because the cold seemed so much more powerful to me than it had ever been before. My bones would hurt in the cold, and I felt myself wanting to go down into that dark place of depression. And I lived in a place where it was like the buckle on the snow belt. 500 feet up the road, there might be 6 inches of snow, and we would get 18 inches where I lived. And I'm talking in about 2 hours it would fall like that. And so we had the snow and the slush and the cold and the wind and the gray, and I just spent my last summer before that in California, or winter before that in California, and the winter before that I'd spent in Miami. And so I was spoiled. I just couldn't handle this cold and gray stuff anymore. And so I had to make myself go out and take walks in the snow and in the cold and bundle up. And the walks helped a great deal. And when it was absolutely too cold or I was just too bummed out to go walk outside, I would go to a mall. And I would walk around that mall, the inside of a shopping mall. And it really was amazing how that simple act would help. Another thing that helps, and this is from the addendum called Peace Without Prozac in my book, excuse me, The Ultimate Breakthrough, is journaling. Journaling for me is like writing a letter to God. And you can journal even if you don't believe in God. But getting things out of your head onto a piece of paper, sometimes I call that like the paper psychiatrist. It's amazing. It's amazing how it helps to get things out of your head and onto a piece of paper. Another simple thing people can do is just express gratitude every day. If you start each day thinking about 5 things that you're thankful for, it will change the tenor of your whole day.
And that really is part of the answer, which is, you know, you can control your own outlook and your own attitude and your view of the day as it unfolds. We are listening to Dr. Ken Unger. He is the Soul Doctor here on Monday Night Radio, and you can give us a call at 866-MONDAY-6, or you can email comments to comments@mondaynightradio.com. And just before we go to this caller, I promise this is the last study from which I'm going to quote. Like I said, this was a really interesting week in terms of a lot being in the news that was relevant. And there was a study published in the journal that is called Nature Neuroscience. And it's about seasonal affective disorder and biological clocks. And this study found what they did was they followed baby mice. And some of them that were raised in the natural light, and some of them they created sort of an artificial winter light, and some of them, you know, artificial summer cycles. And so their premise was that the time of year when you're born can affect your biological clock and therefore could trigger seasonal affective disorder. And what they found was that indeed, for example, the mice that were born under winter conditions had a slowing of their activity regardless of what season they were then placed in. They were just more affected by that than the baby mice that were born during what was considered to be summertime. And so I think that that's really interesting research, because there's so many of these conditions, if you will, such as seasonal affective disorder, that people sort of think of as being kind of kooky and out there and having no basis in science. So I think it's interesting that science is showing that, yes, the very seasons, starting with the season in which you're born, really can have an effect on your very psyche and your state of being. Let's go to this caller. We have Jessica on the line. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good.
Do you have a question for Dr. Unger?
I do. So I had a situation several years ago where I was having increasing mood swings and highs and lows, and so my doctor ended up referring me out to a psychiatrist, where much to my surprise, they told me that I was bipolar, and they put me on a slew of really heavy medication that just really, you know, had me reeling and nauseous and so sick. And it wasn't until probably about a year later, thankfully, I was actually having a yearly visit with my gynecologist, and I found out that it was actually PMDD that I had. And my gynecologist said that PMDD is very, very frequently misdiagnosed as bipolar, unfortunately. And obviously, PMDD doesn't require a big, huge slew of heavy gun narcotics, and she took me off of everything. And you know, gave me other ways to manage around it, and it's been great ever since. And so I'm just wondering, in your experience, how many times have you seen things such as medical conditions actually misdiagnosed as these kinds of things, and do you incorporate, medical diagnostic testing in with your patients before, you know, going to psychological conditions?
I think medical conditions are very often misdiagnosed. It's not really much of a science. It's almost a guessing game in a lot of cases. And I do not use medicine or recommend it other than there's a chapter in the back of my book, there are natural things that people can take that will increase their mood or help them with depression without them needing to take artificially created drugs. And so I'm a great believer in alternative and natural medicine for almost anything, including physical ailments. And I recommend, again, in my book, The Ultimate Breakthrough, there's a whole chapter on things that people can take instead of taking drugs. And I think that there is a legitimate role for drugs in the practice of medicine in treating psychological disorders. But my contention is that drugs should be used to stabilize a person so that you can get to the bottom of what caused the problem in the first place. Drugs don't heal anything, ever, in my knowledge. I don't know of any drug that has ever cured or healed anything. It treats symptoms, and the symptoms are there for a reason. So I believe a psychiatrist or psychologist who's using drugs ought to be looking for the deeper solution instead of merely treating the symptom. And too often they will prescribe the drug as a solution when it's really only a partial solution to perhaps bring a person's body chemistry into order so that they can actually get resolution. But in the work that I do, I would prefer that I find that the drugs actually block their capacity to feel negative emotions so that it's harder for me to bring healing to them. And so I like to help a person get off of drugs as soon as possible. And then if the negative feelings come, I can work with that. I want to get a person when they're depressed or when they're sad or when they're lonely or when they're angry. And I want to get them into those feelings, not airlift them out of the feelings so that we can get to the bottom of it and get resolution. And the work that I do, which is explained on my website, transformationincorporated.com, is called Step Therapy, Spiritual Therapy for Emotional Pain. And as I say, it's really almost everything you need to know in order to heal your pain is in my book, The Ultimate Breakthrough, which is available on my website, souldoctor.com or transformationincorporated.com or Amazon or bookstores. You can order it in bookstores. Again, the reason I wrote the book was so that anybody can afford $20 to buy a book. And if $20 is all it takes to get to the bottom of your problem, and if people will use the book as I recommend, which is only doing a chapter a week, doing all the journaling, doing the meditation exercises, the other exercises that are there, then they will experience the spirit coming in and beginning to show them the roots of their pain. And when the pain is healed, you don't need the aspirin. In your case, you were experiencing tremendous mood swings. And I'm glad you finally found a gynecologist who understood that and able to get you off of those drugs.
Me too. And I do have one other really quick question, if we have time.
Yeah, very quickly, yes.
I was recently watching a wonderful movie where they were talking exactly about using alternative supplements for things like depression, and they were talking about how, you know, they've taken patients off of lithium and put them on really massive doses of, like, vitamin B and C, and mm-hmm. I think you even mentioned D. Are those what you're touching on when you said that you believe in alternative ways of healing?
Yeah, we're talking about psychological things. As I said, there's a whole chapter in my book, The Ultimate Breakthrough, on various things that you can use for different things that you're dealing with. And there are also alternative medicine websites that you can go to and find alternative ways to treat almost every disease you can imagine. For instance, a lot of people deal with acid reflux disease. And, you know, doctors will write you a prescription that you can take for the rest of your life, and it'll cost you a minimum of $30 a month for the rest of your life. Or you could just start drinking some natural apple cider vinegar, and in a couple of weeks it'll be gone completely. So,
wow.
I'm sorry to say, but medicine is designed not to heal the patient. It's designed to get the patient dependent on more medicine.
All right. Well, thank you
very much
for your call, Jessica. And Dr. Unger, we are just about out of time, but I would ask you if you would give out your website one more time. I know it's the souldoctor.com, but the other website?
Yeah, the other one is transformationincorporated.com, and that has to be spelled out. And the search engines pick that up a little better than souldoctor.com. Souldoctor is souldr.com. But the search engines notice Transformation Incorporated much quicker. So that's the best way to find me. And there's a lot of information there on the healing work that I do with individuals on retreats and seminars. People can get a free, easy newsletter, and it'll let them know when I'm going to be doing seminars or retreats that may be in their area, or even if they want to sponsor a seminar or retreat in their area, they can contact me through the website. And get information about the books. I've got CDs, DVDs, and various other e-books on the site, all designed to help people heal and grow spiritually, heal their pain and grow spiritually.
That's just very, very useful and awesome, and we're just very grateful that you were able to make it. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. And again, my apologies that I was late tonight.
We're just grateful that you were here. This is Dr. Ken Unger. He is the Soul Doctor, and you can get his book, The Ultimate Breakthrough, through his website. You can also get it on Amazon, and there will be links to both of his websites up. In fact, I think we have one up right now, but certainly they'll be up in the interview archive. And join us next week when Dr. Joseph Williams talks about the baggage you pack in your luggage, how, what, and how you pack, what it says about you. Join us next week. In the meantime, have a great week.